Dudi Rosenberg, Monday the 20th of July, Dalit Av, is there enough money?
Although there are 105 psikim in Parshas Devarim, we won't have to go further than elucidating the first, which would certainly exceed the half hour that I'm confined to. Should time permit, we will integrate a thought connected to the 9 days and in unity Yom Yitzchak. Eile HaDvurim, these are the words that Moshe spoke to Klal Yisur, each and every one of them. Tvurim are invariably kushim, tough, and here they are words of rebuke. Divrei Techuchos, but the rebuke is cryptic and veiled. Moshe did not wish to embarrass and offend his listeners, therefore, places, names and references allude to the iniquities transgressed, and it is up to us to decode them. The first was Bamidbo. The reprimand Moshe is referring to is in the Pusik, Miyitein Museini Biyad Hashem, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Ki Yoytseise Moisuni El Hamidbar Hazeh, L'humis Is Kol HaKul Hazeh Beruah. If only we had died by the hand of Hashem in Mitzrayim, as we sat by the pot of meat and ate bread to satiation. But you have taken us to this midbar, the humis is kol akul hazeh beruah. Let us proceed to the end of the pusi, the dizuah, which Rashi explains refers to the eger, which they made as a result of having too much gold. Was this a rebuke or an excuse? I once heard an explanation as to why the refuseniks in Russia had the temerity and the resolve to withstand the oppression of communism with such unwavering commitment. The strategy of the KGB went along these lines. The refusenik was dedicated to learning Torah and having shiurim in his home. One day, he gets a visit from the authorities. You hold down a responsible job in the line of engineering. You wouldn't wish to be made redundant, would you? Be a clever man and stop these lectures at your home. He continued, unfazed. A while later, out of a job and desperate for panusvi, he got another visit. You walk home from that synagogue daily via this route. You are only safe because we protect you. You wouldn't want to be accosted in the street by thugs, would you? Don't be silly. Stop it. But he persisted. A couple of brawls and bruises later, he got a further visit. Your little girl goes home from school every day at 4:30. And takes this route. You wanted to stay safe, don't you? You wouldn't want anything to happen to her, would you? Stop those lectures. How many of us would withstand this pressure? I wouldn't. I heard an insight from Rabban Dovid Duner many years ago, and I don't remember in whose name he said it. He made an analogy to a Rambam in Hilchas Melucha in Perek Vuv. Torah advises us how to make a siege against the enemy. Wall them in from three sides, but allow them an exit from behind to flee. Why is it necessary? If you can capture them in a pincer operation, do a foolproof job and seal the enemy in hermetically. But the Torah recognizes human nature. If you deny a man any exit or chance for refuge, he has no choice but to fight for his life in a Herculean manner. If, however, you wish to conquer him, allow him a respectable retreat. The closing Berger Rebbe Zatzal asked an asking in Union City to assist him with the mitzvah. The man agreed and passed comment. I will do my best. The Rebbe became very agitated and looked him in the eye, saying, don't ever say, I will do my best. Why not? Asked the man. When I was a young man, a young boy, my father asked me to carry a shas and other large svurim up two floors to the Bes Medrash. At the time, I saw it as a formidable task, and I told my father that I'll do my best. Years later, in Bergen-Belsen, I was forced to carry boulders that were double my own weight, and to dance while I carried them. Because if I stopped dancing, then the Alsatians at my feet would have torn me to shreds. Up until then, I didn't know what my best was. So be careful when you make such a statement. The analogy to all the above is given by the Gerer Rebbe Shliter. When rebuke is given, it cannot be all-consuming. One has to allow for an exit clause. Al tihi boz l'chol udom. Do not humiliate the entire man. There must be a redeeming factor with which to exonerate himself. Even when Moshe is castigating the nation for the grave sin of the Egel Azov, he will allow them some rationale. Hence, he alludes to the saga as Vidi Zuhov. You probably created the calf because you had too much money. It might not be an excuse, but it allows you to maintain your facade of self-respect. The Gemara says in Bruches, Lamed Beis Umed Beis, Mai Vidi Zuhov. Omer Rabbi, Omer Debei Rabbi Yanai, Kach Omer Moshe Lifnei HaKudosh Baruch Hu. Reboine Shel Olam, Bishvil Kesef Vesuov, Sheishpartu Lohem LeYisrael, Ad Sheomru Dai, Hi Guram Lohem Sheusi Esu Egel. From this Chazal it would appear that the Reboine Shel Olam showered the Yidden with so much gold and silver that they said, enough. This bounty was the cause of the Egel Azov. But remarkably, David HaMelech says, and he mentions in this episode in Tehillim, V'kesef herbeis ilohem, v'zuov osu labal. Note the word herbeisi, which connotes over and above what was required. So, on our pusik of the Tizuhov, there are different slams which give rise to several questions. One, the disparity of Atche Omru Dai and Hirbeis Elohim. Was it enough or was it excessive? The second question, B'nai Yisascha asks, since when does anyone say enough to riches? Don't we have the golden rule, Mish Yesh Leimuneh, Roitze Musayim? The third question, don't we know from a famous Gemara that the Rechush Gudol was commensurate with 200 years of slave labor? And finally, the cashing in of the Bizas Mitzrayim was his response to the Eibishter's instruction. He said, Dabenu Bosneu Om, Ish Ali Ish Mesrei Ahi, Ishu Mesrei Iso, Kesef, Oikailen. How could the outcome of fulfilling this mitzvah be Avoid Azul? So may I draw your attention to Gemur and Sanhedrin, a story on Tzadik Aleph Amud Aleph of a gentleman called Gevia Ben Pesisa. He defended the accusation of the Mitzriim against the Yidden, who were charging them of theft. It was time for restitution for all the gold and silver stolen from the poor Egyptians when the Yidden left Mitzrayim. The response was quick and forthcoming. If you settle the wage packet of 3 million slaves over 210 years of backbreaking labor, we'll give you the change. Sounds a bit like Greece, no? A strong argument. So strong that they fled before the Jews started calculating compound interest. All this intensifies our queries. But the answer to them all is that there were two recipients, and both acted disparately. The Yidden were fully entitled to reparation. They got it from the Ribbon Shel Olam to fulfill. They slaved, they were reimbursed. This money was Elch verdient Geld and did not evolve into an eger. There was, however, an unruly element called the Erev Rav. They never picked up a shovel, an axe, or a brick. During the entire Exodus, they exploited the Bizas Hayam and greedily indulged the Rechush Mitzrayim. And ultimately, they used it to create the Egel Hazov. Lech Reit, Ki Shicheis Amcho. Rashi says, Erev Rav Shekibalto. They were the ones that actually started the Egel. This thought is echoed by Rav Pincher of Pilz, the brother-in-law of the Chiddush Arim, and the Teferes Shloimeh, who adds another pusik in Tehillim. He took them out amidst an abundance of silver and gold. There was no stumbling block amongst his tribes. The Diyukan stress is Bishvutov. The bona fide tribes of Israel didn't stumble through this money. However, the Erev Rav did, which answers all our questions. One, we spoke about the disparity of Atche Omru Dai and Hil Beis Elohem. So either it was enough or it was excessive, and we gave more than the necessary. So the answer is, for the real Shvutim, it was Dai. It was adequate, correct, and ample payment. For the Erev Rav, who deserved nothing and took everything, it was Hirbesi. But we asked from the Bnei Sosra, since when does anyone say enough to riches? Don't we have the golden rule, Misha Yeshle Mune, Roitze Mosaim? The answer was, for the slave receiving his payment, this dictum does not apply. However, for the materialistic bandwagon jumper, it does. And finally we said the cashing in of the business Mitzrayim was in response to the Eibishter's instruction of Dabenu, Ba'oznehu'am v'yish'alu. How could the outcome of fulfilling this mitzvah become an avodah zura? And the answer is it didn't. The Yidden that took and received payment for their toil had kosher money. And that had no negative ramifications. The avodah zura of the eagle that followed was from the Erev Rav and their ill-gained money. Rav Mendel Rimenover makes a frightening insight in connection with all this. Why should children who grew up in a frum homes with a chinuch of Torah, avodah, tefillah, taught to say, Umayin Yaish Mei Rabu, even before they even had their first haircut, and they may grow up, some of them may grow up to become rogues when they are adults, with a business philosophy more in keeping with the Cosa Nostra? Says Reb Mendel that the reason is that the milk and bread and peanut butter sandwiches that they ate as little children came from ill-gained profits with which their father fed them. And this tainted the honesty of their souls. It's a terrifying thought, and I'm only quoting it. On the point, I'm just going to mention that it's written that the Yetzer Hara from Avodah Zura, that was removed, as the Gemara describes in Masechta Sanhedrin, went into the pursuit of money. So the Vedi Zuav was an appropriate reference to the Eger. Sfasemis once lamented, Tayr Chushe v'Kestin Gelat. referring to young married men being sustained by their parents and parents-in-law. They come into me, bemoaning their inability to reach Shisromemus and elevation in the Avodas Hashem. Who knows if the Kest Geld is Kusha Geld? There is a well-known medrash about Alexander Moiten. On his travels, he passed a country called Ketzia. During his sojourn, he met with the ruler and was eager to learn of their judicial system. The king of Ketzia related a recent case in which he had adjudicated. A man sold a field to his friend. Following the sale, he plowed the field and stumbled upon a hidden treasure. It was a chest full of gold, silver, and pearls. He went to the vendor and wished to return the chest. "I purchased the field, but not the treasure chest. It belongs to you." His friend countered, "When I sold you the field, I had absolutely no knowledge of the contents that lay beneath the surface. You now own it. It's yours." Case was brought before the king, who ruled with the following wisdom. Turning to the vendor, he asked, "Do you have a son?" The answer was affirmative. Turning to the purchaser, he asked, "Do you have a daughter?" "Yes." "Let them unite in marriage and share the dowry provided by the treasure." The king noted Alexander Moiten's displeasure. "Why are you dissatisfied with my ruling? What would you have decided?" Without flinching, he answered, "I would have killed them both, the vendor and the purchaser, and confiscated the chest of money." "Oh," said the king, "do you have cattle in Macedonia?" "Yes." "Ah, this might be the redeeming factor of your existence. As for your lack of ethics, your entire country ought to have been decimated." So ends the Medrash. Alexander Moiten was nobody's fool. He asked for a sample of judicial wisdom, not a recipe for tyranny. The Greeks were cultured. What influenced this callous and mercenary response? Imagine the Walton family of Walmart, or the Ford family of Ford Motors, or the Porsche family of Volkswagen Porsche. If they decided today that they had enough wealth for their Eineklöch, they may just close shop. What would be the point in working round the clock to make yet another billion? These mammoth conglomerates would come to a standstill. Alexander Moiten understood that greed is at the core of making the cogs of the world turn round. The insatiable desire for power and money has little relevance to its need. Our vendor and purchaser with their treasure chest do not simply possess the prerequisites for Alexander's world to exist. In his perception, is literally means that notwithstanding the billions, there is never enough money. He couldn't come to terms with the wisdom of the king of Ketzia. His appreciation of Sumeach Bechelkoi could transcend this greed. In fact, the world could amicably exist with an inner satisfaction gleaned from satiation. The king concluded with his reprimand. Animals might be vindicated for their immediate need for gratification. as they live only in the present, they kill because they are hungry and the strongest wins. Murder two men and take their treasure. But humans, who are capable of greater vision, one that does not live only for the present, can create a justice based on kindness. Your kingdom surely exists on the merit of its animals, of whom little more can be expected than killing the weaker and plundering their spoils. It was Alexander Moyton's distorted view that aspiration for wealth and power, catalyzed by greed, is the fuel of the world's continuum. So I ask, is there ever enough money? An unrefined and unlearned Yid, which we call in Yiddish a poor, entered the Satmaruf study during the period of Bein HaMetzurim. He found the Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel, head and hands in what appeared to be a posture of grief. Rebbe, Vusizach, what's the matter with you? He asked boldly. The Rebbe just shrugged, responding, Schrinte begelisse, with a kerz. The Rebbein Shlonim is in exile. The man nonchalantly patted the Rebbe on the shoulder, saying, Oi Rebbe, halavai ob ich eure Probleme. I wish my problems were yours. It's a comical story if it weren't so sad. But we are all there. I certainly. The Bnei Sosra instructs a man to converse in his own way to the Kaviyuchel, to the Rebbein Shlolem in these days, expressing to Hashem our inadequacy in recognizing the gravity of these days. In the Divrei Chizik of Rav Tzvi Meir Silberberg, the following story is told. A man, ridden with debt, went to the Koisel Marovi with his little boy of 5. After lifting his face from the wall for a moment, he saw his son looking up at him, empathetically. He turned to his child, saying, Daven to the Eibishte that daddy shouldn't have any more choivers. The child faced the wall, looking up at the huge stones, and with large eyes gazing heavenward said, Eibishte, ich bet von dir, man tate soll nicht huben mehr ka choivers. Dear God, I beg of you, please help my father not to have any more debts. With tears in his eyes, the father looked down at his little boy, with just an outline of a smile. In his thoughts, Mipi oilim v'yoinkim yisadatu us. Did the little boy know what choyves are? Did he understand the pain of unrelenting creditors and debt? But he doesn't, because his father asked him to. Do we understand the pain of the Shechina drifting across the world for nearly 3,000 years homelessly? Do we at all appreciate the void that the Chobam has left? What are we missing? We have food, clothes, we can walk the streets freely and go on holidays. What do we need a smigdish for? But the Rebbein Shlolem wants us to repeat. V'nir shlayim, ilchu, berachamim, tushiv, B'sishko and b'soicho, kasha dibarto. Say it again. B'sechezenu, einayni, b'shivchu, l'tzioin, b'rachamim. Do we understand what choyves mean? Not at all. But we know that this is our Father's wish. One day, our eyes will be unveiled to perceive Yiri einayni, v'yismach libayni, v'sugal nashayni, be'emoyel le'tzioin mulach elekoyech umay.